A lot of these brands, as they're launching, they're doing it on a ping pong table out of their garage. And I would say kind of when you're getting into the 50 to 100 orders a day, you probably should be thinking about outsourcing it. And the reasons aren't just because of scale.
You said it's always kind of a messy part of the business. It intrigues the hell out of me, this whole notion of returns, and you process returns.
We do.
Why?
Getting culture and trust are the hardest things, and you have somebody who's capable at doing your job. I would tell somebody, I tell my kids this, right?
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and I'm so excited about this episode. I just finished touring QuickBox, a fulfillment company that picks packages and sends tens of thousands of parts and packages and all kinds of things out every month for companies that don't want to do it themselves. I've always wanted to know more about what seems to be crazy difficult. I just would never want to be in this business. And so I'm here to talk with Irene Sharmack, CEO of QuickBox. I have so many questions for her. I had some while we toured around, which you just finished doing. And we'll see if I'm as efficient with my content as Irene and her team are with product fulfillment. I can already tell you the answer is no. But Irene, glad you're here with me and representing QuickBox on ProCo 360.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes. I mean, you know, you showed me so much as we were walking around, but you should probably start. Let's back up. Tell listeners, who are QuickBox customers? Tell us about your business and so forth.
Yeah. So we are a high volume e-commerce fulfillment house. So if you think about ordering a package online, those packages have to come from somewhere. If they're not coming from Amazon, they're typically coming from a warehouse such as ours. We're a third-party logistics provider. So in addition to shipping e-commerce, we also do retail, Amazon, wholesale shipping as well. And we pretty much focus on high volume, small item, high turn items. So think about like cosmetics, supplements, and maybe small CPG type items.
Yeah. So who are your customers? These are companies that don't want to base, are they manufacturers? Are they just marketers? Do they just not want to sell their own or ship their own stuff?
Yeah, they, you know, I think they've tried to ship their own stuff. Some of our customers do. I think what they find is that it's more important to focus on research, development, and marketing, and then leave the like grunt work to us, which is basically getting it to the consumer's door, to the retail shelves. So our customers are, you know, companies such as PureSense. That's a diffuser company that is based out of Utah. Another one is Skinny Fit or Smash Tech. They're a company based out of San Diego, and they basically do like collagens, proteins, peptides, supplements. So those are kind of our typical customers. And just because we actually do their fulfillment doesn't mean that they're not doing fulfillment elsewhere, meaning they could also be on the Amazon store. So you can get online and you could order directly on their website, or you could order on Amazon's website and Amazon will fulfill it or will fulfill it.
So, you know, when you think about these, I mean, what kind of range of shipment between, like, do any of your customers only send, you know, 100 a year? Or are these all thousands of things that go out for every customer every year?
We have clients that do anywhere between 500 orders a day up to 30,000 orders a day. So that's really during off peak, and it, you know, the orders will spike if it's a subscription day. So think of you ordering a supplement and you get that same supplement every 30 days. We will actually have one customer surge up to 28 to 30,000 orders for that particular day.
Wow.
And
wow.
Then during peak season, you know, they can surge up to 45,000 orders a day. That's just one customer.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. I got a bunch more questions about that. But first, I want to background.
Yeah.
I have so many questions about fulfillment. And so I'm trying to answer every curiosity I have in this roughly 30 minutes. So let's talk about how fulfillment works and maybe use an example of a company that you're doing business with that you can name that just kind of take us through the process.
Sure. So I'll use a client of ours. They're phenomenal partners. The name of the company is Smash Tech. Skinny Fit is their brand name, and they actually have a separate like brand under the Skinny Fit name called Super Youth. They are collagens, peptides, supplements. So they basically work with their manufacturers, and they get the product manufactured. It could be domestically or it could be internationally. In this case, it's domestic. So it'll come inbound from a manufacturer ready to ship from, let's just call it Utah or maybe even New York. And it arrives at our door here. We basically receive it, sort, seg it. Basically, we're making sure that the expiration dates and lot codes remain intact and they're not mixed. And so we're putting them away into a location and we're basically getting ready for the orders to drop. So you as a consumer would go online, you'd order a bottle of collagen, and then we would get your order and we would ship it same day. So long as it came in before 2 p.m., we would actually ship it same day. It would be on a truck and headed to your house.
Wow. And so that's direct-to-consumer fulfillment. There's also direct-to-retail.
That's correct.
Right? So talk about that for a bit.
Yes. So if these brands are on a retail shelf, they basically would be working with brands or let's call it retailers such as Target, Walmart, maybe even like a Costco or even an Amazon we fulfill for. So they basically would give us the orders and we also have a must arrive by date. So we work to that must arrive by date. That might give us a week. It might give us 2 days to work on an order. And we basically would prepare it for shipment into the retailer. It could either be going into a cross dock, which means it's going into like a hub where those shipments are then going to go into the stores, or we could be shipping direct to store as well.
Wow. All right. Now, I've got more questions about that too. Okay. But first, I mean, when customers, you said customers don't want to, like they'd rather focus on product development. They'd rather focus on marketing than shipping and all that. But at some point, like, most small companies, they start doing it themselves. They're doing it out of their garage. They're doing it out of whatever, their tiny warehouse. And then they reach some kind of tipping point. I mean, how does that, you've talked to lots and lots of customers. Mm-hmm. How does that thought process go as they make these decisions to outsource fulfillment?
There are 3PLs that are out there that will do smaller orders a day.
One more time?
Third-party logistics providers.
Okay. Yeah,
We're a third-party logistics provider. That means I don't own any of the inventory. The inventory in this warehouse belongs to all of our brands and we ship for them. So there are smaller third-party logistics providers that are out there that will do, you know, 20 orders a day, 5 orders a day, 10 orders a day. A lot of these brands, as they're launching, they're doing it on a ping pong table out of their garage.
Yeah.
And I would say kind of when you're getting into the 50 to 100 orders a day, you probably should be thinking about outsourcing it. And the reasons aren't just because of scale and you being able to scale, but it's also because you're going to have a cost benefit. There's only certain like parcel rates, you know, the parcel shipment getting to the consumer's door are going to be much higher when you're only doing 50 orders a day versus leveraging your 3PLs shipping volume discounts. So, you know, on any given month, we're doing millions of packages. We're actually leveraging those discounts with the carriers and we can pass that on to you as the brand.
So let's say I'm shipping 100 packages a month or 100 of whatever, not a big quantity. And how much would I save in shipping if I were aggregate, if I switched to QuickBox, like what percentage?
It's hard to say. And the reason for that is there's so many different carriers, but I'm just going to give a number. Let's just say 30%.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's pretty, so whatever I'm paying you quite likely gets offset by saving. So the net cost to me is negligible compared to the shipping. Is that a fair statement?
It is accurate. It really just depends on how lucky you got with your shipping negotiations and your rates and what carrier you're using.
But I could see, I mean, it's not hard. I mean, first of all, I hate doing any of those kinds of tasks that would be involved in managing, tracking, shipping, getting packages out. So I would want to outsource if I were doing this. I'd want to as soon as possible. But if the cost became, once you grow it, it seems like it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So how does someone move from shipping it themselves to having you do it? Like, what's the process?
I would be really diligent when you're selecting your 3PL. Make sure that there's a cultural fit, you know, that they're actually operating in the same manner. If you're very much high touch, high communication, and you like that personal touch, make sure that's how your 3PL operates. There's a lot of tech-based 3PLs out there that are more like, hey, if you have a problem, enter a ticket. And you're not really going to be talking to somebody. Most of these brands, as they launch, this is their baby. And they want to know that they're going to be in good care and custody. And they're not going to lose control over their business because they're outsourcing it.
Well, there's a ton of tech, though, the technology that goes into it, right? I mean, there's these famous stories about if, you know, you want Walmart to sell your product, you have to, you know, you have to create this technology interface that makes it work. And it's very expensive. Anyway, how much of that is involved for these companies that are quickly evolving and want to then have you do it? Is it hard?
It's not hard. If you're just an e-commerce shipper and you're on Shopify, we can quickly integrate to you as a brand. So our systems connect directly to Shopify. And so that makes it's a lot simpler than it used to be. What you're talking about is this EDI and API connectivity,
you
know, with all the different EDI transactions that were required by Walmart in the past. Now there's all these hubs that sit in between, like SPS Commerce, that does all of those transactions, and we're just feeding data to them. So I think that part has gotten a bit simplified.
You were talking about these companies where FDA has to be involved because these are things that are ingested, and you do a lot of that kind of work, and you have to manage not just fulfillment dates, but you have to manage expiration dates and all that stuff. Like, isn't that interface like freaking hard?
It can be. We're very focused on compliance here. We recognize that it's one of those things that you have to invest in on the front end, because if you don't on the back end, it's going to bite you. And it's not a matter of if, it's when. And so the main thing that we do here is we make sure that our facilities are all food grade. Some of them are also OTC, which is over-the-counter compliant. And then we also manage to FDA regulations when it comes to segregating by lot code and expiration, and making sure we have a clear tracking and traceability in the event of a recall. That's what's most important. We have to know where that package went.
I would think that's a benefit to sellers too, that, I mean, they've got to know it. They've got to, I mean, they're producing it. They're producing the package. Well, somebody's producing the packaging. You're not. But I mean, that all has to be tracked. But now you become the tracker of those things too, right?
Yes, we do. We have to be able to produce those records in the event there's an FDA audit that they come by. They do mock recalls, and we have to be able to prove that we can recall those packages.
Wow. And so that's a burden that now your customer doesn't really...
That's correct.
Wow. That would be huge if you had a product like that.
That's correct.
Wow. Hey, listeners, this is ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast of the last 4 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is a podcast for people who love Colorado and love the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. It's a great podcast for me, too, because I get all my curiosities answered. This is so fun. My guest today is Irene Sharmack, CEO of QuickBox. Hey, I want to thank our sponsors. Kinsley Meetings is our longest-running sponsor. They grow based on great reputation for planning and conducting meetings with lots of variables. Steve Kinsley and Allison Kinsley own it, and they're great friends and I think trusted partners in the community. Also, Via Technologies. Hey, guys, thanks for hosting ProCo 360, for all the help your great team gives me around managing the website. Thanks, too, to Colorado Biz Magazine. Our partnership is one of building our audiences together. And finally, Denver Angels, and we're partnering to feature great Colorado companies. Go to proco360.com and check out all these great partners. And back to Irene, and let's talk about some of the subsets of fulfillment, because there's different things you do besides take a box, pick it from a shelf, and package it. I mean, you also do, like you mentioned, subscriptions earlier. How do you track that, both from an inventory standpoint and like to know when to ship them and all that stuff?
We have a dedicated client services managers that we like to say are an extension of our clients' brands. So they're in constant communication with the brand. So they will know on a regular cadence, whether it's weekly or monthly, what the forecast is. So these brands are tracking their orders. They know who are their repeat customers. They know whether or not they've enrolled in a subscription. So let's just say I get online today, I sign up for the subscription. I now, every 28th of the month, will actually get my collagen. So I'm already knowing as the brand what that volume looks like, and they're communicating that forecast to us so that we can plan labor accordingly. Yeah.
You've mentioned collagen a lot. Do you like collagen?
I do like collagen. It's the number one protein in your body. And if you want to be youthful, you should actually be replacing your collagen.
All right. There you go. There's Irene's plug without mentioning any particular. Yeah. But anyway, that's so who is the one, like, do you manage the subscription or do they shoot
the brand
you?
Does.
So they'll send you the order, just like any other order, but that's on them to just continue. Okay. Got it.
That's correct.
All right. You also do something called packaging. Well, we know what packaging is, but kidding. Yeah, talk about that.
So if our brand wants to launch a promo, they may say, hey, take these three vitamins and put them together, and this is going to be a starter pack. So what we'll do is we'll source the packaging. We have labeling machines. We have shrink wrap machines. We have printing machines that might be used in all of this kitting. So we call it value-added services. So whatever value-add the brand needs for us to do, we want to be able to do it all under one roof. We don't want them to have to outsource it. So we basically will put those kits together and it becomes a new SKU, and then meaning a new item.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when the order drops, we're ready to ship the tester kit or the trial kit.
Yeah. So if I've got three products, three bottles or whatever, and I said, let's make a kit of this, you will, I'm sure they approve, but you'll create the packaging, design, the little piece of foam cutout that goes in there, you do the whole thing, shrink wrap it, and off it goes. And they don't have to do anything more than supply you those three bottles that they were supplying. Now they're still selling one at a time, but now you're delivering it as this thing.
That's right.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned on the website things around industry specialization, and I saw that. It didn't make any sense to me. Why would you need to specialize? Why would anybody care if you specialize, except maybe in the FDA world where you do have to manage things like recalls or anything else like that?
I think more than anything, it demonstrates experience and capability in the verticals that we're serving. So vertical meaning beauty and cosmetics or health and wellness or CPG or pet. There are some unique requirements that go along with that. And you mentioned one of them, it's FDA. It could be OTC, which is over the counter. They could require GMP or organic certifications. And only a 3PL who's familiar with shipping those items, I think, really has deep experience. It's one of those things where I don't think anybody worries about the compliance until it's too late. So we're able to demonstrate capability at scale, which I think that's why it's important for a brand to pick the right 3PL. You know, that matches. Yeah. Like if you were to tell me, hey, we do some apparel, but I wouldn't say we're apparel experts, meaning shipping clothing. Yeah.
Why does that matter? Like, for example, you're talking about clothing. Like if I'm getting it from a manufacturer, they send it, or a brand, and they're drop shipping to you from China, and it's shrink wrap t-shirt. Like, who cares? Like, why do you need to be specialized in doing that?
If you are an apparel shipper, you are willing to take on, think about apparel. There's many sizes, many colors, and many styles. And a lot of those styles are come and then they're sunsetted and they're obsolete. So you have what we call a SKU, which is it's a stocking unit, unit.
That's what it meant. I know what a SKU is, but I forgot. Like, what does SKU mean?
It's a stock keeping unit.
Got it. Yes. All right. Yeah.
And that means it's its individual identifier that this is a particular item that's being sold individually. So if you are, I used to do fulfillment for an apparel company and we had 90,000 SKUs.
Oh.
So storing those, being able to pick them efficiently, being able to receive them and manage that level of SKU set and do it right, you probably need an expert to do that. We do some apparel accounts that have 100 SKUs. That's easy. No problem. But when you're going to get into the 90,000 or something like that, that is, you should have an expert.
It's a different business.
That's right.
Oh, got it. Is there ever a time when it doesn't make sense to outsource, you know, fulfillment? Other than, look, I get it. If you're only shipping three products a day, I get it. But is there a reason that you wouldn't want to outsource something like that?
I think the number one reason why a brand doesn't want to outsource is they feel like they lose control. They're losing control over their own destiny. They're not the ones being able to pick and ship. So the way we've overcome that, because I wanted to put myself in the brand shoes, was to say, how do we make them feel like they have a pulse on the business without being in the business? So we accomplish that through technology. So basically our technology is real time. It's the information that we're using to manage the business. It's a difference of like 1 to 2 minutes difference. Mm. And you could tell what inventory you have on hand. You could see all the orders that you dropped for the day. Mm. And let's just say you had 2,000 orders dropped for the day and it's coming up on 2 o'clock and I know I'm not gonna drop you any more orders. By the end of the day, I can look online and see, did you ship all 2,000 orders? Hmm. You'll see the tracking number, what carrier they went on. So it allows the brand to feel like they have a sense of control without having to be in the business.
Are there things that are just like somebody shipping like playgrounds? Like, that's just not your world, is it?
It is not.
Yeah.
There are 3PLs out there that specialize in non-conveyables. That's called non-conveyable, can't go on a conveyor. They're big bulky furniture type items.
Yeah.
That's what I said. You know, it really, their specialization.
That's just not your world.
It's not our world.
Got it. That makes sense. Now, you mentioned Amazon Marketplace, and you mentioned to me when we were walking around, I'm really curious where you intersect, where you compete, when they ship, when you ship. Blah, blah. How does that work?
The brands typically will advertise their product on Amazon, and they do a service through Amazon called FBA. That means fulfilled by Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do here, since we stock all the inventory here, when they need to replenish Amazon, because there are going to be consumers, like maybe yourself, you're ordering on Amazon versus going to the brand's website. It's just easier. You might be a Prime member. So you're going to go on Amazon. So in order for the brands to get that inventory to Amazon, they need to still work with us, and we will prepare those shipments to go into Amazon FBA. So what does that mean? That might mean that Amazon, when you buy on Amazon, you can't buy one pack, you have to buy a two pack. We're putting those two packs together, and then we're putting a specific label on that product. It's called an FN SKU for Amazon. And then that way, when it gets to Amazon, Amazon has their own SKU and they have their two pack ready to sell. So that's where we actually are doing FBA into Amazon. So we kind of touch it on both sides.
Well, so then does it go from you into an Amazon warehouse fulfillment?
Yes.
It does. Mm-hmm. So you're...
We're shipping in pallet quantities to Amazon.
Oh, okay. So you're not on demand. When I place an order, you don't hear about it.
No.
The seller is... Who's communicating to Amazon Marketplace to how much they need to have?
Yeah, so Amazon is communicating with the brand.
With the brand,
and the brand says, hey, QuickBooks, I need eight pallets to go into this Amazon warehouse so that they have inventory to fulfill.
Why don't they just work directly with Amazon Fulfillment?
So, one, it's expensive.
Yeah.
And two, during COVID, there was a massive exodus. So what happened during COVID is Amazon basically said, if you're non-essential, you're out. You weren't in their warehouses anymore. So what happened is a lot of brands that were solely on Amazon got significantly hurt during COVID, and they basically said, we have to have redundancy in our distribution network so we're not solely tied to Amazon.
Okay. And then if Amazon decided to stop fulfilling certain things, then they could just ask you, hey, break out those pallets. We need you to ship.
Yeah.
I mean, you could.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it more than anything, look, Amazon's not bad. It is a place where people consume. There is a consumer behavior that's been created. But I also think it's good for the brands to have redundancy, meaning they have their own distribution point, and then they're also fulfilling out of Amazon.
That makes sense. And I would think that they then control more of their destiny, regardless of what's going on with one significant player.
And I also don't know if Amazon does all the value-added services. I can't actually answer that question. Yeah. I don't know if they do the kitting, ticketing, you know.
But if they're working with you, they also get to, aside from just selling that way, they can fulfill from their own website through you. And,
yes.
Right? So
that's right.
They can do both those things together.
Correct.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Talk about this whole idea of, you know, what you do here. I saw you've got about 80 people here. Some are packing, some are picking, some are taking in things. And so talk about that.
The people side of it is my favorite part of what I do. I just talked to the team today. We did a town hall. And the more we grow as a company, the more opportunity we create for our people. I love that. Somebody gave me an opportunity and it changed my life and my family's life for generations to come. And I feel that I want to give back and do very much the same at QuickBooks. So it's a passion. We have a passion for people. Our folks work either on, they could be working on the receiving dock. They could be doing inventory. We actually have a cycle count program where we count all of our inventory once a quarter. We have pickers and packers. We have people doing returns. We have people doing retail, value-added services. And then from there, we have, you know, area leads. We have assistant operations managers. We have operations managers.
So, yeah, lots. And each of these people could start as a picker become a manager.
You met one of them today.
I did. I met Alex. So,
yes.
So what's this opportunity that you got that changed the destiny
for me?
Changed the destiny of your life.
I had some great mentors who just invested their time in me. They invested time and coached and developed me. I still have some of these mentors today that have just... I would say they have given me the right guidance they may have opened the door for me. Let's just put it that way. Right. Because I've kept in contact with these people and doors have been open.
What door? Give an example of a door that a mentor helped you open.
Gosh. So Ray Garcia, he's one of the mentors that I've had for many years. Ray Garcia and I worked together in 2007 and he tried to convinced me to stay with the company I was with at the time. And at the time I was having problems with my middle child. So I actually left and went to a different company for a while so I could be local and not have to travel. Long story short, in 2016, Ray and I reconnected. He opened a door for me to be president of the company that he was running. And then that company was acquired. And then I was with Ray at that new company as well. And I was CCO and president there.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
That's really, were you qualified to be president when he asked you to be?
from an experience standpoint, 100%.
You were.
I would have to say, yes. I mean, I feel like I put the work in, you know, from the ground up. So from an experience standpoint, absolutely. Yeah.
Was there something, I mean, when you say he opened the door, so it sounds like you were qualified and he gave you the opportunity.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's because you'd worked together, developed the relationship, and that's what you're trying to do here?
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the stories we see around automation in fulfillment. You've got another center in Atlanta that you said is much more automated than this one. This one's less automated. Talk about how you think about when to automate, how to automate.
Automation is something that should come in when your process and your system are 100% stable. And you would want to look at your brands and you want to look at their order profile, the number of SKUs that they have. And you basically want to say, does it make sense for us to automate this process or this particular brand? And I'll give you an example. We have a brand that does 15,000 to 30,000 orders a day, and they have 1,100 SKUs, and not one of those SKUs represents more than 2% of the volume. So you can imagine you don't get a lot of picking efficiency through your system. So meaning our process and our system, there's only so much that we can do on the front end. Where we actually have another brand that does 15,000 to 30,000 orders a day, and the top 10 SKUs represent 80% of their volume. So you can get a lot of efficiency just by batch picking and hot pick zones and all that other stuff. So we actually look at the brands independently to decide when to automate. We've done a lot of work on the front end through our system as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Reminding listeners, this is ProCode 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 4 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. I'm here today with Irene Sharmack, CEO of QuickBox. Hey, go to ProCode360.com to subscribe to the newsletter, read my blog, link to sponsors, and catch the books I'm listening to on Audible. All right, we'll talk about this. You said it's always kind of a messy part of the business. It intrigues the hell out of me, this whole notion of returns, and you process returns.
We do.
Why? I guess you have to.
We have to. There are some brands who choose not to return the product because it's expensive. You're paying for the shipping to get it back to us. You're paying for the processing for us to disposition it and return it to stock. And
what's
so
disposition mean?
Disposition means we bring it back in. We look at every single package unit, not even just the package. We're going to open the package. We're going to look at the unit inside. Has it been opened? What is the date? What is the expiration code on it and the lot code? So we basically cannot put something back into inventory that's not sellable. So if the brand or the consumer sends something back to us and it's out of date, they will have paid for it to get back to us for us to disposition it. And then we actually have to destroy it and throw it away. But the hope is you're able to return it to stock. Returns are a messy business. It just is, but somebody has to do it. And we want to do that for our brands.
But in your case, and I guess it would be the case for anybody that's using a third party to help, you're already stocking their product. So, you know, basically if a product comes in and it's resellable, you know, that becomes perhaps the first product that you ship out against the next order, right? So I guess it makes sense. I just was in there and I'm like, and it actually was orderly, listeners. It was very orderly. It's just like, it looks like such a hassle.
Yes.
Such a hassle.
It almost is overwhelming when you look at the process. Our team does a really good job of keeping it organized. And you're 100% right. It has to be the first product that actually ships out the door. Otherwise, it's going to expire because chances are that date code is older than what we have in current stock.
Yeah, but then you also have to make sure you're checking against the expiration date to see if it meets the qualifications of your
that's
brand, right?
Right?
Because you can't ship something that's almost expired.
No, you absolutely can. God.
And you have to track all that stuff.
We do track it. And different retailers have a different shelf life requirements. So some retailers are 6 months, some are a year. So, you know, we have to monitor it by retailer as well.
But t-shirts don't expire.
This is correct. But you have 90,000 SKUs.
Yes, exactly. All right. I got to ask you this. I mean, to me, like no one in their right mind would get into this business. It just seems so hard and expensive. I mean, you've got to have deep pockets to set up all the systems to make this work. So aside from that, my particular knowing that I would never get into it, why did you get into it?
I fell into it.
So does anybody do it on purpose?
You know, I would tell you that logistics has been a blessing to me and my family. My husband is also in logistics as well. Mm. And I feel like the doors that have opened just because of the tremendous amount of opportunity that's out there, there's a lot of 3PLs out there, you know, and it isn't easy work. So the people who actually are good at it and want to do it and have a passion for it, I think it opens a tremendous amount of doors, mm-hmm. whether or not you've had the 4-year or the, you know, master's degree education, there are doors that are open because you're good at what you do.
You're good at it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't imagine what your house looks like between you and your husband. Is everything in its place?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. what kind of culture do you have to run to have a logistics company? I mean, where everything essentially has to be perfect all the time. No? Yeah.
It does. First and foremost, you mentioned a passion of mine. So culture and a passion for people is the number one thing I talk about here. If you get culture right, people want to work for you. They want to come to work. They want to contribute at a different level because they feel like they're part of something bigger than just coming to work and getting a paycheck. So we really work on engagement, like really creating an environment of engagement. And how do we do that? We do that through forms of communication, startup meetings, roundtables, employee surveys. Like, we really want to know, are we an employer of choice? And so culture is super important to us.
Yeah. And I know you pay more than the base levels of wages, and then people have opportunity to grow in their jobs and grow in their comp. So that's good. But you also, you know, headquartered in Colorado, what have you seen from being here versus some of the other locations that you're in or that you've considered?
If you think about logistics, you would not think of Denver as being like the prime spot for distribution. We've done a really nice job of working with our carriers to create what we call a zone skipping solution. Zone skipping solution basically means you're only paying for the transportation from its sort center or point of entry. So what we do is every night out of Denver, we have a line haul that goes into
a big truck.
Yes, a big truck that goes into Las Vegas and a big truck that goes into Chicago. And essentially, those packages are moving overnight. Once they get sorted, that brand is only paying for transportation from Vegas, like into California, or Chicago, like into New Jersey.
Well, they're also paying a little fraction of the cost of the truck, aren't they?
No.
No?
No, our carrier has negotiated that with us. I mean, it's really been a competitive advantage.
Wow.
So, yeah. That's what made Denver super popular for us.
Wow. That's another reason for someone not to do their own fulfillment, because if they're shipping, for example, from Denver, they're paying for all, whatever these multiples and carriers charge by zone, right? How far it goes, right? So if they don't have to pay for that because they're with you,
yes,
that's also a savings.
That's right.
So
Denver has been an advantage because of that. Yeah. You wouldn't think of it as like, hey, this is a logistics hub and where we should be, but because of our zone skipping and our carrier partnerships that we have, it's actually been very much a competitive advantage.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
All right. As we wind down, a couple of last questions. I mean, you mentioned mentors in your life. When
yes.
people look to you for guidance, what kind of advice do you give them based on sort of where you're coming from?
We have formed our company around the trust equation. So I'm going to start with that. Trust is super important. So if you think about building trust with your customers, your employees, and your shareholders, what does that look like? So we talk about the trust equation here on a regular basis. And that means, are you reliable? Do you do your job when you say you're going to do it? Are you credible? Are you capable? Can you do your job? So are you an expert at your job and are you reliable at it? Are you intimate, which means can you basically be trusted with sensitive information? That means no drama, no gossip, no division. And then the last part of it is do you care more about the greater good than you care about yourself? That's your self-orientation score. So I think if you get all of those things in line, getting culture and trust are the hardest things. And you have somebody who's capable at doing your job. I tell my kids this, right? Go in and make it so that they can't live without you, right? You become that valuable to them. So.
And those three attributes again are?
Reliable.
Yeah.
Credible. So are you capable of doing your job? Are you intimate? Meaning, can you be trusted with sensitive information? And I'm big on no drama, no division.
Yep,
this isn't high school. And then do you care more about the greater good than you care about yourself?
Wow.
It's a trust equation.
Is that something, I've never read the trust equation. Who is this something you came up with or somebody famous?
Ray Garcia, the same mentor
I
told you about.
Oh, yeah.
He actually connected me with an executive coach when I was being groomed up at my last company with him. And that was a trust equation that came from an executive coach.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Last question for you is, now that you're where you are, what advice do you have for yourself, you know, that you hope you'll follow?
Boy, I really haven't thought about this one. You know, sometimes I think about like making sure that I find balance in my life, but meaning people talk about work-life balance. At the end of the day, it's all life and I enjoy what I do. You know, my husband talks about retiring and I actually don't even see myself retiring. So I actually don't have advice for myself right now.
Really?
Think about it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So when you talk with your husband, like, and you don't want to retire, he wants to retire. Like, what's he going to do? He's going to go retire and you're just going to keep happily working.
Yeah, I think so. If I had to look forward, I would do something in a little bit lesser of a capacity because I do this to myself. Nobody does it to me of like how much that I work. Mm-hmm. But I would probably do something like board advising or something like that where I'm
staying in the game.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So as you look forward at QuickBox, what's the most exciting thing you can see on the horizon?
We are growing like crazy. We just opened a new building next door here in Denver, Colorado. We opened a new building in Atlanta right across the street from our College Park location. We are working on an M&A opportunity to buy a company in Texas. So hopefully by the end of this month, we'll have a building in Texas as well. So the goal is to grow by one or two locations every year, and we're well on track.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, okay, is the pie getting bigger or are you getting a bigger piece of the same pie?
From what I hear out there, I see a lot of publications. There's a lot of folks struggling right now and a lot of brands are struggling. We have been actually benefiting from growth. So I just feel incredibly fortunate to be in that position that we're not actually seeing what the industry is seeing right now.
All right. Last question, because I'm still intrigued with this last notion, which is, what's the hardest part of your business that I can't see?
The hardest part of the business, if you get culture and people right, you have a good business.
Even in the logistics world?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, the people side of it, here's what I just told the team today. Why are companies in business? They're in business to make money. That's a hard fact, right? So our shareholders are shareholders to us because they want to make money. What do you need to make money? You need good customers, right? But in order to serve those good customers, you need good people. Without the people, you don't have a business. You're not servicing those customers to continue to grow and thrive. So if you get the people side of it, you get everybody headed in the same direction. They say an engaged employee is 59% more productive.
Wow.
Because they're part of the solutions. You get the people side of it, right? You have a business.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap up with that. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCode 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Irene Charmack, CEO of QuickBox. Irene, thank you for answering like all my curiosities about this crazy world on ProCode 360.
Thank you.
Listeners, glad you're here on ProCode 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCode 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Angels, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.